Now, imagine that you're an actor and you have to play Calamity Jane or a Scottish person or a really posh English person, and you just can't get the hang of the accent. Instead of liberating your character, the accent is holding you back. Well, maybe you need a few sessions with one of the country's best-known voice and dialect coaches, Leith McPherson. So what does a voice coach do?
This is what I'm asked at customs all the time. What dialect coach? Explain yourself. I work with actors to really build a character's voice. So from the ground up, you're trying to help the actor to embody a character, which is often an act of transformation. So you're getting them to move from whatever their home accent might be to an accent that could be similar but different for the character, or significantly different for the writing and the story.
So you're also a senior lecturer in theatre at the Victorian College of the Arts. So you're moulding young actors and helping them use their voices more effectively, as well as doing the accent thing?
I'm trying to change the world, actually, Michael.
Yeah, good.
I think that in this country we don't really value voice work in the way that some other cultures do. And so I'm at the coalface trying to build the industry I then like to work in.
I think we mistrust voice work, actually. I mean, I've been involved in theatre one way and another since the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And we used to talk disparagingly about the theatre of beautiful speaking, as though there was something phony about walking to the front of the stage and speaking into the blackness in a way that was powerful and poetic and hypnotic. We mistrusted that because it seemed somehow fake.
The thing about performance is that it will always be a performative kind of energy. As soon as someone gets on stage, they are different. No matter how naturalistic their acting might be, they are no longer the person in the street. By definition, you are sharing a story with a large group of people, and that will change the way that you use your voice to get to the back of the hall,
yeah,
to get to the person in row double Q. That act in and of itself is going to shift the way that people speak.
The challenge for an actor, I guess, is how do you find nuance and subtlety and intimacy and authenticity if you're supposed to talk loud all the time? That must be the question, boldly stated.
And that's the skill. So that's why it takes training. That's why it does take that build-up of understanding that once you find an internal truth, if that's the way that the actor is working, of finding a connection to character, that you then have the confidence and also the physical ability to take that. I'm getting a little bit louder as I demonstrate this, but to actually take that to a horizon that continues to shift. And so that is a skill. It's something that you can learn. It's something that actors do learn. And I remember, for example, when I first moved to London 20 years ago and I saw Dame Judi Dench in a show, and I was in the nosebleed seats. I was a million miles from her down on the stage, looking down at what felt like a sort of 50-degree angle. And yet I felt she was talking to me. Her skill, her generosity, her awareness of the space, both vocally, physically, and with eyeline, just made everyone in the space feel included. And actors who have had a lot of experience with that, it becomes their new default setting. It becomes the way that they think of performance and how to use their voices. I think the issue these days is that a lot of directors and a lot of companies don't trust that process. And we're so used to hearing amplified voices that these days everyone just gets mic'd. You stick someone in the Rospacker Theatre in Sydney and everyone gets mic'd to fill that space. So audiences and actors don't get used to the shared, naturally amplified voice. They're only used to things that come through the speakers, which I think is a tragedy, but don't get me started.
It's interesting that opera singers, on the other hand, are determined not to be mic'd. They really hate being mic'd because they regard it as part of their craft to hit that back wall.
Absolutely. And I feel like that expectation is shifting, but it still needs to be part of the actor's craft. You should always have the sense of sharing the space, because otherwise it's not just that the voice diminishes, but the performances diminish. They become filmic. The actors will work for the distance between themselves and their fellow actors on stage. They're not thinking about the person who's at the back of the theatre because they know they don't need to project to them. So, issues.
Well, one of the marvellous jobs you've done in your life is you've helped the actors in Peter Jackson's Hobbit trilogy to get their mouths around the accents of, well, that world of Middle Earth and all the other realms and kingdoms and so on. So talk me through that. What, how do you get the cast to speak as though they sound as though they belong in a Tolkien story?
You get a certain degree of license with something like that because it is a fantastical world. So that's a nice little buffer to have, that you're not trying to say this person is definitely from Leeds and this is a Leeds accent and we will rise or fall by that authenticity. You're trying to create a vocal landscape. You're trying to, in the case of The Hobbit, identify different family groups or different kinds of races within that world. So there are elves and orcs and hobbits and all sorts of, and wizards and all kinds of.
So how does an
creatures.
Elf talk?
All of the elves speak with an RP accent, which is a term that means received pronunciation. So it's an accent that some people might call Queen's English or Standard British or BBC English. And it's got associations culturally, internationally, across the world with people who are, well, either villains in a lot of American movies or people who are educated or have a high social standing. So when you're playing a noble character like an elf, a learned character like an elf who's lived for hundreds of years, that was an accent that naturally lends itself to the audience's association with those traits. So RP is the accent that you would use.
Right. I think you just sound cleverer if you can speak with that kind of accent.
Well, I would certainly debate that, but I do, whether you are clever,
No, I didn't say you are clever.
No, indeed.
I said one sounds
exactly
cleverer.
There's a definite cultural shorthand as soon as you start to go into that accent. People have associations with it, the kinds of people they've heard speak with that accent before, and they start to make that association with the character that you're seeing on screen or hearing on screen.
Yes. So, okay, so that's the sort of posh accent that we find in the Tolkien cosmos. Yeah. What other accents were there?
Well, there's a character who wasn't actually in The Hobbit, but was in the Lord of the Rings trilogy called Samwise Gamgee, who's a hobbit, which is one of the races of Middle Earth, a gardener, a very sort of salt of the earth type. And that was like going into something like a West Country sort of accent where you've got a bit of that kind of quality, where it's really sort of sing-song and it has like associations with people who are a little bit sort of, you know, more less posh and kind of, you know, grounded and sort of, you know, kind of say what they mean and mean what they say. And I don't want to say they're a bit simpler, but that is for a character who is intended to not be a sort of noble hero, but is like the person that you root for, that you really want to succeed, heart of gold, then you might have an accent like that. That is not an uncommon choice.
And I suppose the challenge is to get the character to see the world from that side of the fence, because it's easy to see that accent from a kind of London BBC point of view as a kind of amusing person from the provinces.
Oh, I have big issues, but yes, absolutely. There were characters in The Hobbit who, you know, like might have a northern accent, so they're going for something which is intended to be like they're a bit more direct and they've got that kind of no-nonsense, you know, grounded sort of thing going on, where you have that feeling like you're not posh, you're straight up, you just got that kind of state it the way it is and just be direct with people and don't take yourself too seriously, that kind of accent, which is something that we played with as well.
Right. So if you're coaching someone in that accent, let's take that accent there, do you start with certain sounds that are kind of markers of that accent?
Yeah. When you're first working with an actor, they can feel, depending on how far they have to shift, they can feel like it's just a wall of different sounds. And so you need to help their brain to do what their brain is built to do, which is to recognize patterns and then to start to identify that, although it can be a big number of changes that you're doing, they can be quite consistent as you go through a text. And with actors, you're always working with prescribed text. They know what they're saying before they say it. So you can then start to break down those rules and help them to shift the vowel sounds, shift the consonant sound, then start to piece that together with the tune of the accent, then put that into something that is embodied. So you never want someone to sound, with any theatre work I do or film work that I do, you don't want people to come away saying, what a great accent. You want them to have focused on the story. So the actor then needs to make sure that they are finding that in their voice and they're applying that to the story that they want to tell. What are they saying about the character with that accent?
So let's take that. So on the wall behind you, there's a sign that says, listen, hear the world differently.
Yes.
So suppose we stick with that northern accent. How would I say that so I sounded like I was a cricketer from Yorkshire?
Listen. So I'd start you by talking about something called the dark L. And the dark L sound is where you've got the back of your tongue up. So you, it's like it's filling your mouth. So if we do, in Australian, we do a light L and a dark L. And a light L is where you put the tip of your tongue on what's called your alveolar ridge, which is just up and behind your upper teeth. So if you take the tip of your tongue, listeners, to your upper back teeth and then the back of your upper teeth, and then take it around that little corner that you'll feel behind your front teeth, and you'll feel a little ridgy bit. That's called your alveolar ridge. And when we do what's called a light L, we have the tip of our tongue on that spot and we have the back of our tongue down. So if you're saying a word like my name, Leith, you're going to have the tip of your tongue on your alveolar ridge and the back of your tongue down. But if we're going for a northern accent, I'm going to go for a dark L with that. So it's going to have the back of your tongue up. So it's going to be Leith.
The word is listen. Let's go with listen.
So do that all, like you're filling your mouth with your tongue. Listen.
Listen.
Yeah, listen. And then you'd say, hear the world differently. So hear the world differently.
Hear the world.
World differently. So we're not doing anything with the R there. We're not going for like world. We'll do that for Scots.
Right.
But here it's just hear the world differently.
Hear the world differently.
Yeah. So there's not a lot in that that's going to change. You don't have any of the O sounds that you'd want for Northern, or you don't have the U sound like love and trust and once. But it's those are the key sort of sounds.
Let's add to the ABC slogan, you'll love it.
So, yeah, great. So you'll love it.
You'll love it.
Yeah, great. So we're taking the vowel in love and we're making that an sound.
And I'm trying to get that
you'll
elegant.
Love it.
You'll love it.
Yeah, love it.
Love it.
Yeah, you'll great. Love and it. That's great that you picked that up, because that is part of a lot of English accents, that where we would do what's called a schwa at the end of that, we'd say you'll love it, where we use that sound which is called a schwa.
We do it all the time.
Yeah. Oh, the schwa. Don't even get me started. That's a whole it's a whole series of programs.
We're schwa crazy in Australia.
We're schwa-tastic. Mm. So they would say, you'll love it.
Love it.
Yeah, great.
So finding that it is hard.
Yeah, well, because we're not used to it. And the other thing about that schwa change is that we do it in places that are unstressed.
Yeah.
So we're doing it when we're trying to get out of a word or not feeling like we're connected to a word. But here it's actually something you have to pay attention to because you're wanting to change it. So when you do, and that's going to happen in RP as well, you'll love it. You'll love it. Or if you're going for like, you'll love it. You'll love it. It's the same thing. So you've got that pattern in a lot of English accents and you just start to apply the pattern to the text.
We've got to stop, but I'll tell you a schwa story.
My wife
Hannah and I were in Spain some time ago and we needed a doctor.
Mm.
So I said to the guy where we were staying, can you tell me where we'd find a doctor? He said, doctor? What is doctor? I said, doctor, you know, doctor when you're sick. No, not doctor, doctor, doctor. As if I couldn't speak English. I thought, that's my Australian accent, doctor.
Love it.
Oh, love it.
I love it.
Leith McPherson, thank you for teaching us about accents.
My pleasure.
Leith McPherson. So what does a voice coach do? And Leith McPherson is a leading voice coach and dialect coach, and that's the first of a series which Leith made for us, teaching us how to use or how to create a series of really useful accents. They're lots of fun. You'll find the entire series on our website.